Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is utterly amazing that there is one person, one very significant person missing from the entire Ferguson matter. Welcome to the Savage Nation, ladies and gentlemen. I am not Dr. Michael Savage. He is enjoying his day after Thanksgiving off. It is Douglas Urbanski filling in for Michael Savage, who is not here today. The phone number, anything I mention is fair game, is 1-855-400-7282, 855-400-7282, and you can go to Michael's website, www.michaelsavage.com, and you can also purchase his book for Christmas, Stop the Coming Civil War. So, it's Doug Urbanski filling in for Michael Savage today, and I was mentioning, amazingly, there is one person, a significant person, who has not weighed in on the Ferguson matter, has barely weighed in on the amnesty or non-deportation matter. I'm talking about Hillary Clinton. Her silence, Hillary Clinton's silence on the matter, is it is deafening. Deafening. Do you notice that there's almost nobody, who, in fact, I don't think there is anybody, who is a political aspirant for the White House in the upcoming presidential elections, which cannot get here soon enough. There is nobody who has had anything to say about Ferguson other than Obama, who is, you know, busy chatting with Sharpton and ginning everyone up to the point of mental insanity about these matters, that matter, and all kinds of other things. Now, can we assume, ladies and gentlemen, that at some point the Republicans have accepted that they should not bother competing in an attempt to get the African-American vote? And there would be good research to say that that's probably what they did. It's probably what they were smart to do, because when you polled African-Americans, they were always behind Obama. Race never seemed to matter to the white voter, but it seemed to matter tremendously to the African-American voter. Well, the voice about the entire Ferguson matter is that's been missing has been Hillary Clinton. She's been completely absent in recent days, and she is, if we are to believe the reports that we read, she is the front-running, what would she be at the moment? She'd be the non-candidate for the Democrat nomination for president. She's not out there mentioning Ferguson. Now, she's mentioned in passing a few opinions about the Ukraine. She's mentioned in passing a couple of comments about ISIS. She's lining up. By the way, the line forms to the left of all of these characters. We'll get to Schumer and Biden in due course today. They're all lining up to distance themselves from this president. They're lining up. Not surprisingly, Biden was the last one in line only recently. But the line forms to the left. She distanced herself from the president. She's been, as I say, she's not shy about mentioning her opinions about the Ukraine or ISIS or many of Obama's foreign policy disasters, which is kind of funny because she was there in the kitchen creating the recipes and the menus and ordering up what they did together. She never ran from that president and never said, I must resign on principle, which is what a decent person might say. She stayed there and did it all, but she is not commenting on the grand jury's decision. And there is a question of character here that we will be delving into today, because there's more details about Mrs. Clinton that are worth talking about on the day after Thanksgiving. And there's a bigger question, of course, which is the question that's being raised about Mrs. Clinton is not merely about her. It's about the Democrat Party itself. Because, ladies and gentlemen, you know that African Americans are a huge part of the Democrat Party base. I wish that that was otherwise. I sincerely do, because the Democrat Party has failed the African Americans in a horrendous way that you know, and I don't need to go into it. But it is extraordinary that the Democrat Party's second most visible leader, the word is leader, Obama being, I suppose, the most visible leader of that party, the second most visible leader does not see it necessary, does not see it helpful to speak out about Ferguson at a moment that appears to be very crucially important to so many African Americans. Now, we know there are lots of things that can go wrong for a politician when they speak about things like this. However, my friends, you know and I know that taking risks, stating your position, convincing people that you have a good and worthwhile position is what leadership is all about. So you've got Hillary essentially sticking her finger in the air, looking eventually for some sort of public consensus. The Clintons were experts, as you remember the word triangulation. And I think I made the comment to you last time I was here that the days of Obama make triangulation look like the good old days. Because triangulation, to remind you what it was simply the Clintons figuring out what the American people wanted to hear and to be done, and then ultimately doing that, which kind of trumped many of their leftist leanings at the time, because their vanity, their interest in self-aggrandizement is synonymous with the name Clinton, is it not? So what Hillary does is stick her finger in the air, looking for some sort of public consensus, triangulation, and then she'll discuss it with Bill, who will tell her what to say, because she has no leadership ability on her own. Now, think of this. I mean, because everyone's pretty smart. I think everyone gets the plot of what's going on here. If she praises the grand jury for finding the truth, she risks losing the very important African-American vote. If she were to sympathize publicly in some big way with Sharpton and these other characters, these thugs and these people breaking the law, then she loses many, many people in all directions. There's nothing in it for a Democrat to inject themselves into this conversation. She is trying, maybe for the first time ever, to not inject herself into matters that she knows nothing about. Now, the Sharptons, the Obamas, the Holders of the world, they haven't figured that out. They love, you know, injecting themselves into anything. Now, this is what would we call Hillary? We would call her the Grand Duchess of Benghazi. Yes? But she knows that she cannot jeopardize the African-American vote. She's going to find out which way the wind is blowing. She's got to, obviously, if she's a serious candidate for president, she's got to separate herself from Obama. And she's going to have to separate herself from the policies, every policy, domestic and foreign, of that administration. Case in point, it would be Schumer distancing himself yesterday on the failure of Obama to focus on middle-class Americans. And Schumer's taking some flack from Pelosi. I'll get to this as the show unfolds today. But if you recall, there were people who felt there were people who said that Bill Clinton was the first African-American president. It would be very interesting to know what someone who perceives themselves as the next president of the United States, the next leader, would have to say about Ferguson. Now, the Gallup polls that are out are telling us of some very deep trouble for Hillary, because Obama's numbers are so low. Since he took office, Obama's approval rating has dropped 13 points amongst college-educated whites, and a remarkable 21 points from the non-college-educated. Now, you might say, why is there a difference? And your liberal friends will tell you, well, the difference is because Obama is black and there's latent racism hidden inside these polls, which would be obviously incorrect. The decline of those who approved of Obama when he was newly elected, this is the important thing. They were not racist to start with, and they didn't become racists in the intervening 6 years. What happened? Well, you know what happened. There was a brunt of Obama's failed economic policies that just washed up on them and across this country. Obama's economy. has been a disaster, not merely for the country, but of course for the minority members that he panders to, and for working class families and working class whites are part of that. So when Hillary runs in 2016, she is running as the heir of Obama's liberal economic and immigration policies. So she does not have a built-in advantage that Obama had when he ran initially. These are sort of shocking numbers, because after the Obama debacle, it's very easy to believe that the people whose attitude is feed me, house me, clothe me, America, that they would elect any Democrat. But I don't believe this is so. Hillary is not Obama, and she's awkward, and she has a personality. I made the joke. Oh, I don't know if I should say it, but she's looking. I'm not going to comment on her appearance. I'll hold back on that. The big problem for Democrats is this. Hillary is the so-called next guy in line for the presidential nomination. That is a problem, because when Democrats nominate the next guy in line, they end up with Mondale, they end up with Humphrey, they end up with Al Gore, and what they end up is losing. The same is true for the Republicans. They're not excused from this rule. The GOP is just as guilty as the next guy in line syndrome. And we can all remember Bob Dole, John McCain, Mitt Romney. And I, for one, certainly hope that they have snapped out of this. Or if they haven't, we are doomed to have a Jeb Bush candidacy in 2016. And I hope we do not. I think he is one of the worst of the worst of the worst, ladies and gentlemen. The problem is that the Democrats do not have a backbench. They have no party depth. They have Elizabeth Warren, and they fantasize about her, and some people fantasize about Jon Stewart. But the Republicans do have, if they care to dig into it and dig in deep, there's a talented field of governors there, and it scares these Democrats. It scares them very much. And it scares the Republican elites, who will still go back. The Republican elites still want to make the same mistakes of recycling when there's no need to. Urbanski has made this. I've suggested, seriously, an amendment to the Constitution. Many countries around the world have this rule, and that is simply this, that no member of an immediate family of someone who has been president would be allowed to run for the presidency. No husband or wife, no brother or sister, no son or daughter. That once you have somebody who's held those reins, you cannot have another member of the immediate family run for president. And this is how you prevent the growing of these useless political dynasties. Can you imagine Clinton Bush again? Two of the most useless people out there. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-855-400-7282. My name is Doug Urbanski. I'm filling in for Michael Savage. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-CON.
It is the Savage Nation. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Douglas Urbanski filling in for my friend Michael Savage, who's, I hope, enjoying his day off after Thanksgiving. The phone number at the Savage Nation, 1-855-400-7282. The book, the superb book, you should get it, Christmas is coming, is Stop the Coming Civil War by Dr. Michael Savage. Also the website, worth going to. Worth not missing, in fact. In fact, keep his website on your screen so it annoys the liberals sitting around you. It's www.michaelsavage.com. You know, when we look at this Ferguson amnesty, the characters lining up to distance themselves from Obama, I'm talking about Schumer, Biden, Hillary, etc. Ladies and gentlemen, you are being subjected to lie after lie after lie after dirty lie every place you turn. I don't merely refer to something like climate change or the so-called amnesty lie, but every last one of these things has at the nub of it the desire to expand the reach of government and also to take away liberty from individual citizens. Now, I'm going to deal with a story that's been in the news in the past couple of days. And you will think for a moment that this is merely a local story, but it's a very important story. And I'd like your opinions about it at 1-855-400-7282. This has to do with a restaurant in the Upper East Side of New York. And this restaurant was fined $5,000 because they put an ad on Craigslist asking for a hostess coat check. And they didn't really think about it. And it turns out that there is a group called the New York City Commission on Human Rights. New York City has a commission on human rights. And it's an Italian restaurant. I'm not going to name it. I've been there. It's a good restaurant, very good restaurant. And they get this $5,000 fine. Now, the commission, the New York Commission on Civil Rights, says that it has one of its own employees reply to this ad in two emails, one email pretending to be a man, one email pretending to be a woman. And the commission claims that only the woman's email was opened. Now, and of course they go on to say in New York City, it is illegal under the human rights law to express a preference for one protected class over another in an employment advertisement. So they have a group of people called testers, commission testers. And they spot these ads, and you picture they're sitting around in these rooms looking for nothing but these ads. Now, is the word Stasi coming to the back of your head at this point? The commission files a complaint against a private business, against an Italian restaurant that advertises for a hostess. They flag the ad, they send these fake emails, they have their testers. Their testers pretend to be people they're not. What's happening here, ladies and gentlemen? It's like a sting operation because you merely advertise for a hostess or hat check. And by the way, the restaurant now claims that they did this accidentally. It was an inadvertent mistake. But there are testers reading the ads who are coming for you, who are coming for your local restaurant. I think we're out of control, ladies and gentlemen, being spied upon by testers, the IRS, Obama's police. And where is it? Where can you be safe? We'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
And Hillary Clinton has not weighed in on it. Do we not have a right to expect somebody who feels so entitled to be the president of the United States to know exactly what they think on big, important issues of the day? Can she have an opportunity here that she's missing to maybe put some cooling and calming words on the flames that are inciting Ferguson? Now, there's a very, very, to me, interesting story that's appeared about her. She gets paid a lot of money, like $300,000 to give a talk. And she gave a talk right here in Los Angeles at UCLA. And a story has come out that is somewhat embarrassing. You won't hear it in the mainstream news. That's why you've got to listen to the Savage Nation. She does this talk at UCLA, and she gets paid $300,000, which apparently is her going rate. And the details of this negotiation have now been made public. And the school, UCLA, asked for a reduced rate because it's a public university. And they were told, back by Mrs. Clinton's representatives, that $300,000 is the reduced rate. She's just one of, you know, regular people, regular folks, isn't she? $300,000 for a talk. Now, the Washington Post had to get this information using a Freedom of Information Act request, because this is hard to get. And you get a very interesting glimpse into the background of Mrs. Clinton's, who has a very lucrative speaking career. She has an agent who handles this, and they dictate the sort of details that we don't even do. I'm in the motion picture business. And I deal on a daily basis with the biggest movie stars in the world on the planet. There's no bigger stars on the planet than ones I deal with on a constant basis. No bigger movies than the ones I deal with. Get this. Mrs. Clinton requests lemon wedges on water and glasses of water on stage. She requests a computer. She requests hummus and crudité in the green room backstage. They even get down to the details of the type, the style, the color of the chairs she might sit in, the kind of pillows that are on the chairs, the shape of the pillows. She has dictated that the chairs are outfitted with two long rectangular pillows, very detailed, and that they keep two extra cushions backstage just in case a chair was too deep and she needed more back support. She gets a teleprompter. She actually gets a teleprompter plus monitors for her to read from. You'd think she had memorized it by now. She uses a very special sort of microphone that she seems to like. And she has a team that walks through these places before she visits them, an advanced team. By the way, her talk is about 20 to 30 minutes. 20 to 30 minutes for the $300,000. Now, she has made, according to the Washington Post, dozens of these paid appearances across the country. She does this at industry conventions. I've not come to the creepiest part of this, though. There's a very creepy part of this. She does this at industry conventions. She does this for Wall Street banks, and she does it at UCLA. Now, her $300,000 fee for her UCLA 20 to 30 minute talk goes to the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. That is the family's non-profit group. She gets luxury travel arrangers. I didn't talk about it, but somebody spent a whole day going through the absolute fetish these people have for expensive private jets, and they get very, very picky about the type of jet that they're on. So they ask for a case of still water at room temperature, they specify, to be deposited stage right. And then also a carafe of warm water, hot water, coffee, saucer, room temperature, lemon wedges, all the rest of this stuff. Diet ginger ale is on the list. And her team, she was going to be presented with a UCLA medal. And the Clinton team did not want the medal presented to her around her neck. They asked for it to be in a box. And these are the sort of details that, you know, just a regular Mrs. Anybody, regular average person, would pay attention to. But ladies and gentlemen, here's the creepy part. Here's the strange part of the story. She has approval, 100% approval, over all promotional materials. Fair enough. The university, when they pay the $300,000, they have permission to record the event for archival purposes only. They are not allowed to publicly distribute these speeches. They're allowed to give a 2-minute approved video on YouTube for 1 year. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is the creepy part. Do you not think that anybody who's going to put themselves forward to run for president of the United States, do you think that their speeches, their words should be hidden? That there should be contractual reasons why her conversation should not be available to you, to me, to watch, to see what she's out there saying for $300,000 day in and day out. By the way, the university gets to take 50 pictures with her. And we're told that when they have to take these pictures, she wants everybody ready. So she steps in there. She doesn't want to wait around for people to organize around her. She wants to step right in the picture, have it snapped, and leave. Bill Clinton's last fee, by the way, at UCLA was $250,000. Dollars in 2012, so she gets $50,000 more than her husband. By the way, there are people at UCLA who objected to this, and when it was announced that she was coming to UCLA, they did an online survey to ask the public, well, what questions would you like to ask Mrs. Clinton during her 40 minutes? She has a 40-minute question and answer session. Do you know, ladies and gentlemen, how easy lifting that is for $300,000? A question and answers session where no real answers are going to be given, no real questions will be asked. So the university announces it, and they get a flood of emails. The majority of the questions that the people want asked have to do with Benghazi. And since we'll never see the tape of this interview, we'll have no idea what was asked and what she said. But there was a man, a donor, who said, well, why is a public university charging for the pleasure of providing Mrs. Clinton the benefit of a very high-profile platform? And the New York Post story reveals that behind the scenes, UCLA basically said, don't answer questions like this. Don't answer unless he's a major donor. We don't have to tell, unless somebody's a major donor, we don't have to tell them why we're giving her a platform. We don't have to do that at all. So the question would be, does the greed have no boundaries? Why would any university pay Mrs. Clinton to say, pay her to say the same things that she has said and that you and I have heard over and over and over again? I don't want to suggest that they're stuck on stupid. But no wonder tuition goes up. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't recall anything important Hillary Clinton's ever said in her life. And you ask yourself, what sort of person would pay to go see her? You do. Anyway, she has a teleprompter. You think she would actually know what she has to say at this point. And, you know, once you start getting into this idea of these not-for-profit family operations, and both sides of the aisle do it, there was one Republican wannabe last time around who, had he made it to the end game, I'm not going to tell you who it is, you can guess it all you want. Had he made it to the end game, the big story would have come out was how much money he pays himself from the not-for-profit. That's the dirty little secret about the not-for-profits. They sound so charitable. But they pay their executives, who might be, you know, the names that we're talking about, they pay their executives a very insane amount of money. So the entire fee gets paid to the Bill Hillary. Now, when you point this out to people, especially our liberal friends here in Hollywood, they'll always mention the Koch brothers, as if there's something dirty and devious about Republicans giving money for items and areas that are of interest to Republicans. Ladies and gentlemen, the Koch brothers will never catch up with the liberal contributions of George Soros if we live to be 1,000. They would have to give 10 times as much money. But seriously, who's any interest in hearing what Hillary Clinton has? They want to ask her what about her one accomplishment, marrying Bill Clinton? And these are the same people, by the way, who complain about the one percenters. They complain about the corrupting influence of Wall Street money. They complain about the Citizens United ruling. And they're lining up to buy tickets that help pay for the absolutely obscene speaking fee of Hillary Clinton. They get a line up to buy, you know, Hillary 2016 bumper stickers. Then you ask yourself, what sort of character are the people behind all of this? What sort of character is Hillary Clinton? Think of somebody who the Democrats hold up high, like Harry Truman. He doesn't abandon Europe. He doesn't abandon Japan. He doesn't abandon Europe to fall to the Soviets. He doesn't abandon Japan. He sends Douglas MacArthur, General MacArthur, to Japan to create their constitution, to help write their laws, to set up their parliament. He goes there for 18 months and does this. Hillary Clinton, Obama, they absolutely have abandoned Iraq to jihad. They've abandoned Libya. They abandoned Egypt when it desperately needed them. If she really felt that she should have been distanced from Barack Obama and his policy, she could have resigned. If she had felt opposed to any of these things, opposed to the retreat in Iraq. But she did not resign over those things. If she didn't support Obama, and you're going to hear a lot coming from her, stay tuned, about how she didn't support Obama in these endeavors, then why did she continue working for him? Now, when these characters give a talk like this, you know, it seems like very normal stuff. But at the end of the day, what does it say about the person? Because the devil really is in the details. These contract demands conflict with the image that she wishes to portray to the public as being the other people's proponent. And, of course, they have these charities that, that often function as slush funds for people's sole benefit. So you get a convoluted contract. She doesn't ask for a direct fee. What would she say in a speech? I'm going to go to a break in a moment, folks. What would she say in a speech? I remember her Secretary of State being so joyous that Gaddafi was murdered in Libya, as this was a great moment in world history. And we now see that Libya has fallen into chaos, a mess, anarchy. It's the Savage Nation, ladies and gentlemen. It's Doug Urbanski filling in for Michael Savage. Short break. We'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation, ladies and gentlemen. Douglas Urbanski filling in for my friend, Michael Savage. Phone number here is 1-855-400-7282. I'd like to take a few of your calls now. Sue in WABC in New York. How are you today, Sue? Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I'm doing fine, Doug. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to start by saying, you know, with Hillary... I think they're going to try and trot her out as cover for somebody new, that kind of like they did with Obama, likely probably a female Hispanic person, but they're not very smart. They're more devious than they are smart, and you should never trust the Democrat Party anymore.
But do you have this mysterious female Hispanic person in mind? Do you have a particular person you're thinking of?
I haven't given it a whole lot of thought, but I think when you kind of look around, even at some of their governors, and you look at Liz Warren and people like that, there is reason to be concerned nonetheless. I don't know who the Hispanic female would be, but you have to look
though, I'll tell you something, Sue, what doesn't concern me? Think about this. I think that these liberals, progressives, whatever you want to call them, I think that they are absolutely unaware that their policies are not popular. I think these people are living in a bubble where they think we really want the sort of stuff that they're dishing out.
Yes, that's where I'm saying they're not very smart, that they're, they're devious. They think they feel they're confident enough to think they can get away with it. They've underestimated the American people.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's my point. So thank you very much for calling the Savage Nation. One more before we scoot along here. Roman in Florida, welcome to the show, Roman. How are you today?
Yes, doing great. Thank you. To a point, when I was young, I was taught that you have to always face your demons or face your problems. Mm-hmm. Don't put things off and don't procrastinate and try to deal with it head on. Wouldn't it be a refreshing approach to find a candidate that would maybe take all the numbers and all the statistics and all the factual parts of all the problems we have in the country, be it African-American, Spanish, white, Asian, doesn't matter, go to all of them and each one and address them and tell people, this is what it is, this is what we have, this is what we can do to maybe solve it or resolve it, and maybe have like infomercials like Perot had when he was running.
Roman, listen, how is it down there in Florida? I'll change the subject. That was fine. Thank you for the call, Roman. Very good. I'm going to move along here. This fantasy candidate who's just going to address the issues and let me tell you something. Ladies and gentlemen, the fantasy candidate needs one quality above all. As he's got to be a conservative. He's got to understand he's got to have some libertarian roots for sure. But he's got to have the ability to articulate conservatism and, crucially, to be able to speak over the heads of the media. It can be done. Our site never talks about it. Must be done, in fact. No two ways about it.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content,
psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, let us just remember that the midterm elections were less than a month ago. The way the media is acting, you'd think they were the Dark Ages, about 1,000 years ago. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Michael Savage is not here today. It's Douglas Urbanski filling in. The phone number is 1-855-400-7282. Once again, 855-400-7282. If I mention it, it is fair game. The website is www.michaelsavage.com. Michael Savage is one word, and his superb book, good Christmas gift, Stop the Coming Civil War. You must get it. I want to address the level of lies that you are hearing about just about everything. Now, let's just stop for a moment and think about immigration. When we hear about what the president did last week, and we hear this notion that people wanted a fix to the broken immigration system, that they wanted something done having to do with amnesty. Ladies and gentlemen, the facts are never discussed in the story. Never discussed. When you think of the people coming across our border, and we're largely talking about Mexican people. I live in Southern California, so we have plenty of them here. When we are thinking of the people coming across our borders, they say we do this for humanitarian purposes. Something must be done about the plight of these poor people. And the answer they come up with is then the illogical one, that the plight of these poor people can only be addressed by America deciding it's something different than what it is, by fundamentally changing the country we know and love. But no one, and I'm talking about some of the disgraceful people here in Los Angeles, the Catholic Church's leader, Archbishop Gomez, about the Catholic Church has been appalling on this, by the way, about the open borders question. Appalling, and I'm a very serious Catholic. Probably get hate mail because I am. Always do. When you stop and think about the plight of the people who, we are told, deserve a better life, we are told that we can help them, that we must understand them, that we must change the makeup of our country, change the education level, change the way we look, change the level of education, the level of diseases that come into the country. When you look, their only answer is that which will help bring down America and, at the same time, install a potential voter base that is entirely beholden to the Democrat ticket. No rational person ever, at least none of these leaders, on either side of the aisle, by the way, at this point in the story, discuss something that can really be done to help these people. If you genuinely were interested in helping these people in Mexico, you would, because Mexico is a very fascinating country. It's a wealthy country. It's got climate. It's got oil. It's got tremendous human resources of people. But what Mexico also is a very, very corrupt country. Now, the United States of America meddles in things all over the darn planet. But if you really wanted to help the people of Mexico, what you would be doing is using America's influence, her might, her pressure to influence Mexico to become less corrupt, more law-abiding, to become a functioning economy for everyone who lives there. Why on earth does the liberal mindset say we must tear down the United States of America? By bringing in all of these people, we must change who we are, what we're about, when in fact, if we really want to help them, what we want to do is help Mexico, help Mexicans in Mexico. Why do they want to leave? Because things are quite horrible there. Jobs are horrible there. There are drug cartels there. There's corruption there. The answer is not to change the United States of America. The answer is to help influence and change Mexico so that people who want to leave there want to stay there. You won't hear a politician on either party say this. This is the big lie, and I almost want to throw up when I hear these guys on television, all these pundits telling you, well, Americans want, we want to do something. It's our obligation as the society we are to spread our wealth. It's our obligation, we are told, to take our blessings and make them available to other people. The way you make them available to other people is export them. Now, American voters on the topic, we are told that they, you know, that many of these people, I've watched some of these debates on television over the past several days, and we are told by these so-called experts that American people wanted the president to do what he did. The American people do not want the president to do what he did. Let me be very clear. American voters are somewhat divided about the action that he took. They were somewhat divided before he took the action, but 45%, or rather I should say 48% of Americans felt very strongly that he should not have taken any action. This is from a Quinnipiac University national poll that was released last week. Now, support for what he did is at the lowest level ever measured by Quinnipiac in their polls. So there were three choices on what to do about these illegal immigrants. 48% of American voters said they should be allowed to stay with a path to citizenship. That was down. It was 57% a year ago, November 2013. And the number keeps going lower and lower. 11% say that immigrants should be allowed to stay, but not allowed to apply for citizenship. And 35% say that illegal immigrants should be required to leave the U.S., and that number is up almost 10 points. 12 months ago, that number was 26%. Today, it's 35%. They should say they should be required to leave. But no place in the country, and by the way, that's the highest that number has ever been. The Democrats support Obama's immigration move, I mean, like 75%, according to this poll, 74%. Republicans oppose it. Republican voters, people. I'm not talking about Republican politicians now. They oppose it by 75% also, same number. Now, and amongst independents, by the way, 51% of independents oppose it and 40% support it. Okay. Where in the conversation are we going to have a rational talk that if you were really sincere about wanting to help these people who wanted a better life, better work, better employment, you realize, ladies and gentlemen, that prior to Obama doing this, during the last 10 years, during the Bush presidency, during the Clinton presidency, you had people crossing the borders from Mexico into the U.S., and they would risk death. Many of them died. Death from starvation and from thirst in the desert. Can you imagine how horrible death from starvation and thirst in the hot desert must be? I think there's very few things as bad. And these people so badly wanted to risk that for a better life and come into the United States of America that they would risk death by starvation and thirst to do so. And we are told by the experts that it's America's wealth needs to be spread around by opening our borders, by letting them in here and letting them infiltrate the United States, invade the United States of America. And we never, ever, ever have the conversation that if you really want to do something good for the Mexican people, for all the Latino people who are in these oppressed countries, is to, look, we try and exercise influence all over the place, to ridiculous ends very often, especially under the Obama administration, but nobody has the rational conversation. How do we influence Mexico? How do we influence them to make it desirable for their people to want to stay there? By the way, Obama, I don't know if you heard this, Thanksgiving holiday. Don't you find, interrupting myself as the great interrupter that I am, do you find that the timing of the Ferguson verdict and the timing of the Obama amnesty speech, the timing of these two things was very, very fascinating? I know nothing. I have no special secret information here. But the timing strikes me as very, very interesting that Obama decides that he will give this amnesty, and I know they don't like you to call it that, but let's use that word because we all know what we're talking about. He decides to give this amnesty knowing that it will last in the news cycle barely for hours. Barely for hours, because the Ferguson verdict is going to come out, and that will kidnap the news cycle. Did anyone notice that? Did it strike you as odd? He could have done this at any time, but he did it, and they always do these things. As I began a few moments ago saying, ladies and gentlemen, that the midterm elections were less than a month ago. And do you know Obama went around before those elections saying, you're voting on me and you're voting on my policies. These elections are very much about me and my policies, even though his party said, please, please don't go around. Please don't go around. We don't want your help. Don't go around telling us this. He went around saying this. And then after the election, he didn't like the results. He said these elections are not really a result on my policies. Did you notice this? Anyway, yesterday was Thanksgiving on Wednesday. Buried in the news cycle, Obama is out there, and he's in Chicago, and he goes off of the teleprompter, and it was a mistake for Obama when he goes off teleprompter. He's giving a talk, and there are some hecklers who are heckling him about who are heckling him for not doing enough about amnesty. And of course, he has to go off teleprompter, and he says, don't yell at me. It doesn't make sense for you to yell at me. He says, what you're not paying attention to is this. He said, I just took an action to change the law. This is the very thing, by the way, that Obama and every last one of his adversaries said he could not change the law. He himself said it, I don't know how many times, countless times, that he didn't have the authority to change the law. And now he's out there. He's on Wednesday night. He said, you know, I've taken steps to change the law. The mask always slips off of these people. The mask always slips at some point, and you witness these things from this character. Anyway, it's all a lie because, and we'll get into Schumer in a moment, because that's another story been buried in the news and it's worth taking apart. The lie on immigration is this, that we do nothing to help the people of Mexico want to stay in Mexico by helping lift up a wealthy country out of corruption. It's been struggling with corruption and communism. One form of corruption or another for over 100 years, and it's a wealthy country. And if we need to help Mexico, why does Canada not have these problems? I mean, it's kind of interesting, our other border country. You would think with Mexico being our border country, we would be way in there. Why are we not? And why is the whole lie revealed in that one analysis? Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'll take a break. I will come back, and I will tell you the lie about Obamacare. And it's very similar to this one. It's Douglas Urbanski. It's the Savage Nation. Michael Savage is not here today. 1-855-400-7282 is the number. We'll take a short break right now. We'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Savage, not here today, day after Thanksgiving, taking the day off. It's Michael's friend, Doug Urbanski, is here with you, and also guest hosting today. The Savage Nation phone number, 1-855-400-7282 is the number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. The book, the fabulous book, Great Christmas Present, Stop the Coming Civil War by Dr. Savage. I want to take some calls before I go on to the Schumer matter, which is coming. Ernie at WABC in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. How are you today, Ernie?
Oh, I'm doing just great. It's Bernie, by the way, and it's great to hear you on the radio again. We missed you, but to get to my point.
Well, you can thank Michael Savage for that, Ernie. It's through Michael's good graces that we're here.
Well, you're both great. I have to disagree with you a little bit, Doug, though, when you say that the progressives think that most of the people really want what they're selling. You know, but they don't really care what the people want, Doug, because they think that they have
a different
division.
I don't want to be a disagreeable character. I didn't mean to imply that. What I was trying to imply was that progressives seem unaware that their policies aren't popular.
No, they read the polls. They don't care. They think that eventually they'll be proven right, And us little stupid people will say, gee, you know what, you know, we didn't realize it at the time, but Obama was a genius. I mean, he saved us. I don't know. That's what I think.
Well, yes, I find myself sometimes thinking the same way. But you know what? You know, Ernie, Elizabeth Warren, let's use her as an example, and your own mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio.
Oh.
Did I hear a response at his mere name?
Comrade de Blasio, go ahead.
Well, but they're still out there, and they're still talking about the same things that they have talked about for years, these characters. They're still talking about climate change. They're still talking about income inequality. Their progressive agenda doesn't change at all, no matter what the election results were less than a month ago. Which is why I think, you know, I'll get to an analysis of Schumer's comments soon enough here, but they are in a bubble. They do believe, I think, that I don't think they quite ever get it, that their policies are not popular. They believe that the answer is that they haven't framed it well. So let's take climate change, for example. They say, well, the research all tells us, not only that the key research tells us that voters don't care much about climate change. So what these people start doing is they start saying, well, maybe we're not framing it well. Maybe we're not framing it right. And then they go into a sort of hysteria where they say it's the biggest health and economic challenge of our time. They are still saying this stuff, Ernie.
Well, I understand. Doug, real quick, what do you think about Giuliani, Ben Carson in 2016, or vice versa? I think that would be unbeatable.
Well, I fantasize about all kind of great things. I don't think it will happen. Can you imagine? Did you admire, as I did, Ernie, some of Rudolph Giuliani's comments about Ferguson?
Yeah, but a lot of people agree with that. I do. You do.
I thought he articulated them first out of the gate very well. And of course, then you saw, and I saw, that people called him, you know, a hardcore racist as a result of putting the facts out there. No, I mean, we're going to have to see where this all shakes down. I'll tell you one thing. The one I don't want to see is anybody named Bush anywhere near it. Can we agree on that?
Oh, absolutely. But,
I mean, I think he's the worst of the... He's a Common Core guy. You know about Common Core, Ernie?
Sure, I do.
You a big supporter of it?
Oh, hell no.
that's easy. Don't ask the witness a question if you don't know the answer. Thank you, Ernie. It's great to speak with you, great to hear your voice. It's Doug Urbanski, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Savage Nation. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in mere moments.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
They can have a true, honest vote of what kind of government and what kind of people they want to be.
Well, this is my point, Rick, and what I'm surprised at in this whole conversation, not left or right, apart from, and I don't need to pat myself on the back, by the way, I never, ever, ever hear anybody make this point that you've obviously thought of and that I've thought of, which is you've got this tremendously wealthy nation. It's got this great climate, this great country, the great people. We know they're hardworking, lovely people. And what does America do? We say, you know, let's bring America down to third world status instead of saying, how do we lift Mexico into first world status? It's insane.
That's right. I agree with you 100%. And the problem is, it makes you wonder where that drug cartel money is going when Americans are being dead every day from the poison these people are sending to this country. And yet, we're not even willing to do something to help American people from dying from this poison.
Well, the first thing, Rick, you have to do before we get even to those, before we go behind the curtain into those kind of details and conspiracies, whether they're real or imagined, whatever they are, the first thing we need to do is articulate the reality that we meddle in all kinds of things, in all kinds of places all over the world, and we have done for years. Sometimes we do it well, other times we do it to great disaster. But the idea that the country with which we share this hemisphere, that we will bring and import its people with a real plan, which is to ultimately institutionalize leftism in this country, to have them be as a beholding voter base, to bring us down to an overspending, in-debt third world country without simply saying, wow, what a hemisphere it would be if we could help Mexico be another first world country like we are. They've got all this oil wealth. Well, and we never hear, this also, Rick, shows you the lie of every single one of them, of their entire conversation about immigration reform. Because they don't, they will, including our own Catholic leaders, we will never, ever talk about the idea, how do we reform what's going on inside of Mexico?
Look, you got the, all these criminals down there running the country. Americans would love to go down there on vacation, have a good time, spend money in the Mexican economy, help them out. Yet you have to worry about going down there and getting killed. So,
and you know, by the way, Americans are not allowed to own property within a certain amount of miles of the coast. Are you aware of that?
Well, it don't surprise me any, number one. Number two, I used to know a man who lived on Social Security. I used to buy stuff from him at the Broadacres Flea Market in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And what he did was go down there on his Social Security check. He had a little ranch with two people that worked for him, the ranch hands. And they made things like braided ropes out of horsehair and stuff like that. And he brought them up to Las Vegas. And, I mean, I was just all happy to see him when he came up there with stuff from Mexico that I could buy to use to wheel and deal in the market. And
wonderful.
That opportunity is, like, totally wiped out.
Yeah, it's all different. I would never dream of going, like, down to Tijuana for a bullfight or something. I would never want to set foot in the place. But, really, we can't have a sane conversation about immigration without having a conversation about what do we do to help Mexico. We want to help all these people, but we don't want to help Mexico. There's something terribly inconsistent, and you don't hear one politician, one person in leadership position saying this. Rick from Toledo, thank you so much for calling the Savage Nation and speaking to a mere guest host, Carol in Boise. Welcome to the Savage Nation. How are you today, Carol?
I'm great, thank you. I'm so glad to get into this. I have thought for years that TV, radio, newspaper should go down to Mexico, take photographs, and show how the rich live there. I know very well. I spent 6 months of my junior year in Mexico City, lived with a Mexican family. I've gone to language classes down there. My father, growing up, my father had a gas business. He sold equipment, gas tanks, et cetera, to a family in a business in Hermosillo. I went down for weddings. I know how their relatives in Mexico City, I visited them. They had a beautiful home in Las Lomas. That's a part of Mexico City.
Now, but your point, Carol, is what? That the rich live like super wealthy, yeah?
Live, yes, okay. They need, but they have no sense of contributing to their own. Americans, I mean, the women, they don't go down to the hospital once a week and help or, you know, drives, et cetera. They ought to help their own people.
Yeah, well, the problem, as you know, is corruption in Mexico. And the main thing, I think my bigger point was less that than, yeah, I can't hammer home enough that nobody in a position of leadership or power in this country ever says, how do we help Mexico get their act together? We turn America into a third world country by importing Mexicans, but we don't say, how do we lift Mexico into being a first world country? And we don't even have that as a beginning talking point. I'm not even getting into the nuts and bolts about how you do it.
I agree completely, but the wealthy should, you know, get up and emphasize that and talk about it and, you know, and get involved. I mean,
well, you think that their 1% are abusing the situation?
Oh, abusing? These people had up to three homes. Mm-hmm. You know, one on the coast, one.
I hope they have, but Carol, I hope they have 10 homes. I hope they have 10 homes. I hope they have 20 homes. I don't care. What I want to do is to influence the country.
Yeah.
What's that?
I agree with you. I think we should shame them into it.
Yeah, I hope they have 10 homes. But somehow, we need to really have a conversation with our neighbor and say, how do we make this entire hemisphere a first world hemisphere? Not how do we make this hemisphere a third world hemisphere?
I agree with you completely.
All right, Carol. Hey, Carol, thank you so much for calling the Savage Nation and speaking to a guest host. Well, one more before the break. I'll speak to Elizabeth at WABC. Elizabeth, welcome to the Savage Nation. It's Doug Urbanski here. How are you today?
I'm very well. I own some property in Mexico and have spent a lot of time there. You're absolutely right about the corruption, absolutely right about it being a very wealthy nation. The corruption goes back more than 100 years, and it allows normal people no opportunity in the open market. Here's a suggestion that is right on hand for Americans. In Europe, people go to Hungary for health tourism because the care is good and it's low. I have heard of hospitals that are developed often by American doctors down in the places that are still protected because they allow safe tourism. They are protected because the drug lords have made a deal. Nevertheless, you could go down safely to places like,
okay.
Very comfortable recuperation from major operations. This would be a boon to Mexico and a boon to the United States, and people would not have to go to Hungary. Mexico is fabulous. The people are wonderful. The Catholic Church has done absolutely nothing for the economy. Actually, the evangelical churches have helped because they've told people, don't get drunk, be responsible. The Catholic Church, we've been to so many festivals, and the guys turn up late, and they say, we understand you. You're the poor people. Mexico.
Oh, and I'll tell you something else, Elizabeth. Speaking as a Catholic here in the U.S., the Catholic Church here has been disgraced because they want the open borders. The Catholic Church in the U.S., of which I'm a serious Catholic, the Catholic Church in the U.S. is delighted to align themselves with every group of abortionists, every group of leftism they can, and to institutionalize it here forever through open borders and giving the left, the Hispanic vote forever, the Latino vote forever here in the United States. But, Elizabeth, you're familiar with Mexico. Do you not agree with me that all of our thinking shouldn't be wrapped in the package that every person, 100% of them, keep telling us, but instead that we should be talking about how do we lift Mexico into being a first-world country instead of pulling America down to being a third-world country?
I totally agree with you, and the economic analysis that Hernan de Soto, a Peruvian, made of Peru and Egypt holds to Mexico, too. The red tape is so humongous that we know a property owner who had his property simply because he'd lived on it for many years, decided that he wanted to make it official. After a couple of years, many, many expenses that he had to go to, and then he said to us, well, now I'm privileged to pay taxes. It's impossible. If you have your family chicken stand and you want to borrow a little money to make it a two-roaster chicken stand and perhaps hire somebody and then leave it to your kids, you can't because you cannot incorporate a tiny business. The happy thing here is that the amount of aid that we could possibly send to Mexico is dwarfed by this street economy that cannot borrow, cannot build, but it's there. And if they had ways of building, but it's so tied up in corruption and banking and all that, you're absolutely right. The open market is not available to the ordinary.
But now think of this. Think of this, Elizabeth. We are told that we need this cheap labor, this cheap Mexican labor here. We're told this all the time. But I do not see these American corporations running to Mexico to give the Mexicans the jobs in Mexico. And I don't see Sheldon Adelstein opening a giant casino in Mexico to give them the jobs in Mexico.
Absolutely. And regarding jobs, I believe I heard Alan West speaking on the radio with a most cogent review of how the impact of this number of immigrants who will be looking for housing, schooling, and health will be entirely on poorer neighborhoods. Let us not say a racial divide, but honestly, if it was Alan West or someone, and it was recently on a talk show.
But do you think, Elizabeth, that somebody would deliberately be interested in seeing that be the case?
I think so. Gotta be.
You mean you think it's deliberate that they would bring these people here hoping for that?
Isn't it horrendous?
I'm being cynical with you, Elizabeth.
So, and it's horrendous, and it's absolutely a betrayal.
Right. Yeah, well, listen, thank you very much for listening to The Savage Nation and speaking to a mere guest host, Elizabeth. I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you very much for calling. It's Doug Urbanski, ladies and gentlemen. I'm filling in for Michael Savage today. The phone number is 1-855-400-7282. If I mention it, it's fair game, and we haven't even gotten into Schumer yet or some of the other ideas that progressives are just wedded to that the public keeps rejecting over and over and over again, and the call board is lighting up with people who are experts on Mexico. Oh, I see many good calls. Stick with us, folks. Doug Urbanski, we'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-CO-IN.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation, ladies and gentlemen. I will have to get to the Schumer stuff and some more stuff in the third hour today because this topic is really taking off. The whole point being, we're getting calls. The board is flooded because many, many of you out there have fought this but wondered to yourselves why no one has ever said this, what we're discussing about what to do with Mexico and immigration. No one ever discusses it here today on the Savage Nation. Doug Urbanski filling in for my friend Michael Savage. It's the first time you're hearing this on a national show. So I want to continue on the topic with your calls. Let's go to John at WABC in New York City. John, welcome to the Savage Nation. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great, and I just want to be thankful that I could talk to this massive audience. And you're a great guest host for the great Michael Savage.
And that is, we thank Dr. Savage for that. He invited me here personally, and we are pals.
Definitely. All right. The thing with Mexico now, it's on our southern border. To me, it's like almost like a war's going on. Only one side knows what's going on. I mean, they're dumping a good portion of their population inside of our country. But we have to remember now, the fix is in, because you know, people in our country, the establishment wants them in here. Republicans, Democrats, corporations all want, this massive, influx.
Now, but John, stop a second. Now think, I hear what you're saying. Now, think with me. Imagine if the whole debate was changed and framed the way that I framed it in the last half an hour or so. Wouldn't that change where the American people were at and what they wanted to see happen and how our leaders would have to talk about it?
Of course. But the problem is the American people don't react to their neighborhood goes. So, like, if you're in New York, like I am, or California or Florida or certain areas that were hit very hard, these people know better than anybody. I mean, basically, California, a lot of people, Americans, evacuated that area. And Americans don't react to their neighborhood goes. And that's the problem. But we've been trying to ring the bell for years. I mean, there's been voices in the wilderness. And this is what really has to be done. If you let me tell you flat out what has to be done, we got to put our best electronics, 50,000 troops on the southern border.
Listen, John.
Go ahead.
You and I, I'm with you. The toughest border enforcement and controls ever. It's easily done. It would serve a great purpose. My bigger point is this. The minute we stop giving the Mexican government and Mexican people, who are very nice people, the incentive to come here and make it attractive for them to make Mexico a great first world country, that turns the whole hemisphere into a first world hemisphere. The minute we do that, the problem is solved, and nobody in the public sphere is framing the conversation this way. That's my frustration, John.
Right, but also I would also add, also there's more things American people can do. The 65 Immigration Act has got to go. Family Unification Act has got to go. Also, there's an executive order for affirmative action hiring on the federal government. It's got to go. And we got to remember now, NAFTA was passed.
Yes, but John, all these details are great. All these details are terrific. And you're obviously a very educated man, well read on this. My point remains the same. The American people have been sold this idea that don't you think we should help these people? Don't you think they are entitled to their shot at the American dream? Don't you think they should be entitled to their shot at success and a good life? And my answer would be, let's reframe the whole conversation. Everything you just said is true. That whole laundry list of things have to be changed and looked at, John, has to be adjusted. But the minute you reframe the conversation as to how we can really help the Mexican people by making Mexico attractive is the way. John, I have to scoot, and I'm very appreciative that you called the Savage Nation from WABC today. I really am, John. Thank you. It was great having this little chat, just the two of us on the phone like that. I hope we'll do it again sometime. It's the Savage Nation. It's Doug Urbanski. 855-400-SAVAGE is the phone number. We're going to get to Schumer and that whole story. I'll explain to you what the backstory there is in a few moments.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282, Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
So the midterm elections are less than a month ago. You'd think that they never happened at all. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Douglas Urbanski filling in. It is the Savage Nation. It's Douglas Urbanski filling in for my friend, Michael Savage. Phone number here is 1-855-400-SAVAGE. 1-855-400-7282 is the number. MichaelSavage.com is the website and the book. A great Christmas gift item, Stop the Coming Civil War. So the midterms are less than a month ago, and shortly after that very dramatic night, I don't know if you recall the stories, Harry Reid came out, and he was sort of distancing himself from Obama in a sort of lackluster way, and I said to the people who were pointing that out to me at the time, I said, look, don't you believe for a second Harry Reid distancing himself because he had blaming Obama for the losses. At the end of the day, Obama equals Reid. Obama equals Pelosi. Obama equals Schumer. These people are all interchangeable. Obama, in fact, gives them the cover. Obama gives them the cover that at this point they can say, well, I'm distancing ourselves from this horrible guy, even though they were the levers of how he has effected much of what he's effected. It was a very short time from when Harry Reid was distancing himself from Obama to the talk last week in Las Vegas where Harry Reid said, go as far as you want on amnesty, where Harry Reid was cheering him on. So these people like to have it both ways and always. So on the day before Thanksgiving, when the story started hitting the news that Schumer was saying out there that Obamacare was a big mistake, but the timing of it was a mistake. My ears perked up, and I knew you'd missed the story, and no one really talked too much about the story because the Thanksgiving holiday was upon us. So we're going to do that now on The Savage Nation. Schumer is giving a talk at the National Press Club, and it's very important to remember all the things he says in this talk, not merely that Obamacare was a mistake in the timing. Because he's very clear, Schumer says he supports the law fully. He supports its policies. And he says that these are very positive changes. So with the Democrats, and you'll hear this again if you simply stop and think and parse out what they're saying, the Democrats will always say, well, our problem is in our strategy, not our ideas. It's our strategy. It's our timing. It's how we frame something. But our ideas are good. Ladies and gentlemen, it's their ideas that you reject. Their ideas are horrible. So he's arguing that the Democrats have acted wrongly in 2008, considering that 2008 election a sort of mandate, even though the American people, you know, history will show us, there was no mandate in 2008. There was no mandate ever since. That Obama was always elected as a cult of personality. You can say he was elected because he was the first African-American presidential candidate. That may well be true. He was elected because he promised hope and change, although his definition of hope and change clearly ended up being very different from your definition and my definition of hope and change. He clearly wanted to have fundamental differences, and he clearly has no moral compass about how to achieve these fundamental differences. He is utterly delighted. Look, a guy like Obama knows that this is always going to be messy. It's going to be messy to have to do what he wants to do, to make it unrecoverable and unfixable. So Schumer is out there confirming what I'm saying to you, which is that it's a matter of strategy. It's a matter of timing. The truth about Obamacare is this. Ladies and gentlemen, you know it. I know it. Obamacare has never polled well at all. Not during the discussion time when it was being sold and forced on you. Not in the time since when it was passed and being forced on you. It has never polled well. You've never wanted it. So Schumer's theory about how it all went wrong requires you to understand that the stimulus went well. Here's what he said. He said after passing the stimulus, Democrats should have continued to propose middle-class-oriented programs and built on the partial success of the stimulus. But unfortunately, Democrats blew the opportunity the American people gave them. He said, we took their mandate and put all of our focus on the wrong problem, health care reform. So, ladies and gentlemen, how much of a success was that partial success Schumer talks about when he, of the stimulus. It was none at all. So most Democrats who were following the lead of Obama, and they passed the stimulus, and these people believed that they had fixed the economy, which they had not done. So Schumer, at this point, is looking for an explanation about these enormous two in a row, consecutive, utterly blowout losses in these midterms that tell us that Democrats have a difficult time winning. They have a difficult time winning without Obama and his cult of personality being on the ballot, which is what they're saying to us. Because nothing that they have delivered to us, not the stimulus, not Obamacare, none of it, not a jot of it lives up to the hype for the average American. I want to share with you something about, we've been talking the theme of today's Michael Savage show, The Savage Nation. The theme of today's show is lies, the big lies, the diddy lies of it all. Well, the big lie about, we talked about the big immigration lie in the last hour. People are still holding to talk about it. I may even get to you, folks. Big immigration lie, something that we never talked about in this country. We've only heard it here on The Savage Nation. Well, the big health care lie was not merely that if you liked your doctor, you could keep your doctor, or if you liked your insurance policy, you could keep your insurance policy. This had very little to do with doctors, very little to do with insurance policy. This has everything to do with the ever-expanding, the need to have an ever-expanding tarantula octopus known as the government. The big lie here was, don't we think everyone deserves health care? You were never told that your doctor, your own doctor, would have to change how he's allowed to interact with you privately. You were never told any of the details of these things. It was all done in the shadows, as you recall. The big lie here was this, that if the left was genuinely concerned about getting people health care who didn't have insurance and who couldn't afford or have any health care, do you not think, ladies and gentlemen, that the United States of America, for the 5, 6, 10, 11, call it 15, call it 20 million. Pick a number. We're 350 million people, 380 million, in the most successful, wonderful country in the world. Do you not think we could have found a way, without rewriting the healthcare laws and changing everything for everyone, do you not think we could have found a way in one page, in one piece of paper, to write a healthcare law that somehow provided for those people without changing it, without screwing it up for everyone in the country? Because it had nothing about. Even to this day, we watch them on these Sunday morning shows telling us that was the reason. There were too many uninsured, too many who didn't have access to health care. We are told this lie endlessly. No one ever calls them on it. If that was the genuine reason, that they wanted Obamacare, why didn't they type it on one piece of paper and have a law that did specifically that thing? Because that never was the reason. You know that wasn't their aim, that wasn't the reason, and I know that wasn't their aim, wasn't the reason. Now look, Obama, we've had two controversies in addition to Schumer coming out yesterday. And Schumer's got something wrong here. He thinks that their problem was the timing, but that it's a good law. The problem was that the American people never wanted it, the polls never supported it, the American people still don't want it. What he's really saying between the lines, and he doesn't even understand this himself, is how do you sell people things that they don't want? Now that brings me to Jonathan Gruber. You've been told a story over and over and over again during the past 3 or 4 weeks about Jonathan Gruber, Jonathan Gruber, Jonathan Gruber. Now, this story you've been told itself has a giant falsehood that you have to buy into when you think about Jonathan Gruber. Shall I tell you what that is on the Savage Nation, ladies and gentlemen? I will. Jonathan Gruber, and you all heard the audio, you heard the audio here, you heard it elsewhere, you had it up to your eyeballs. Jonathan Gruber was making the concept public that as an architect of Obamacare, you depended upon the stupidity of the American people, and that's how you sold it. Ladies and gentlemen, the big lie here is that Obamacare was never sold to the American people. It was never sold to you. It was never sold to me. The big lie here is that Jonathan Gruber was not selling it to them. The big lie here, he wasn't selling it to people who are conservatives on talk radio. He wasn't selling it to people who are conservatives on television. He wasn't selling it to any Republican on the planet or any conservative on the planet or most libertarians on the planet. The whole thing of saying that American people were stupid, so we needed to sell it, also required Nancy Pelosi to say you can't read it until we pass it. You got to pass it to see what's in it. But it also required, that there was no normal voting procedure on the darn bill to start with. It was all done through the reconciliation process. It had to be forced and squeezed through the legislative process without any giant mandate or groundswell from the public who wanted it. No one wanted it. So they forced it down your throat. They forced it down everyone's throat. And Gruber is out there saying the reason we got it through is because we convinced the American people of a lie. You did a darn poor job of it, Mr. Gruber. What you did. Here's the lie you convinced people of. I'll be very honest. Mr. Gruber, you convinced politicians to take taxpayer money and pay you. You convinced Obama and his people that they needed you and that you should be paid a very high amount of money. You convinced no one else. If you had, you'd have had the polls favor your law. You would have had people reading about it and liking it and wanting it. You would have had politicians not having to think about how they twist and turn the entire legislative process into bizarre shapes in order to pass it. Mr. Gruber, your theory that you're out there proudly telling us that you had to lie to get it passed and convince the American people to be on board falls flat on the face of the evidence. Ladies and gentlemen, has anybody said this to you? Has anybody explained this to you about Jonathan Gruber, that he's out there as a professor preaching the idea that you must lie to the American people to sell them something, and that if you do that, you'll succeed, by a man who didn't succeed at doing it? He succeeded at convincing politicians to pay him. That's the entire thing he succeeded at. I'm just getting started in this, ladies and gentlemen. Big conversation we've got to squeeze into our remaining moments together. It is the Savage Nation. It is Doug Urbanski, guest host, filling in for Michael Savage. If I mention it, it's fair game. 1-855-400-7282 is the number. We'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-CO-IN.
This Savage Nation, it is the Savage Nation. It is Douglas Urbanski filling in for Michael Savage, who's taking the day after Thanksgiving off. The phone number is 1-855-400-7282. The website is michaelsavage.com. And the book, very important that you get the book. Buy it as a Christmas gift. Stop the Coming Civil War by Dr. Michael Savage. Okay, very short time ago. These are not Dark Ages stories, ladies and gentlemen. You think it is because this administration moved from one crisis to the next, hoping that you don't have time to stop and consider their actions. So you had amnesty one day, the Ferguson verdict the next day. You forgot about amnesty the next day. You forgot about Jonathan Gruber. He was the day before. It's the same churning. All of this stuff is worth stopping and talking about. Obama is down. He's in China, and he stops in Australia on the way home. He insults the Australians about climate change, and he stops in Brisbane just when the Gruber controversy is popping in the news and everyone's talking about it. And Obama says, you've heard the audio of this, and Obama says, I just heard about this. He said, the fact that some advisor who never worked on our staff expressed an opinion I completely disagree with is no reflection on the actual process that was run. Now, it's all come out, and you are aware, because you're a very educated audience, that yeah, he did work on it, and he did hear of him, and he was very involved. You all know that already. But there was a bigger lie that Obama said, a bigger one. So it's lie after lie after lie. But the dirty lie part of it, the really dirty lie, the really nasty part of it was Obama then said, we had a year-long debate. And he does this with a great performance of exasperation. He says, we had a year-long debate. Go look back at your stories, he says to the press. One thing we can't say is that we didn't have a lengthy debate over health care in the United States. It's fair to say there is not a provision in the health care law that was not... I'll say it again. Obama, I'm quoting Obama, he says, it's fair to say there is not a provision in the health care law that was not extensively debated and was not fully transparent. Ladies and gentlemen, This is a falsehood, a big one, a deceit. It is a deceit supported by no truths in defense of a scam. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, it is true. There was a national argument about Obamacare, sure. And it is true that the press covered it. Not fairly, they covered one side of it. But an argument, ladies and gentlemen, you know the difference. Do I have to explain to you the difference? An argument is not a debate. They're two different things. Never mind that we never even had anything remotely like a transparent argument or a transparent debate. If Obamacare was so transparent, then why did Nancy Pelosi, who was essentially the number one promoter of Obamacare, why did she then insist that the only way to know what's in it is to pass it? Who can forget that great hit of the era? 2009, we all remember George Stephanopoulos on ABC. He confronts Obama about the fact that the individual mandate is attacked, and Obama, you know, filibusters and scoffs, and he starts, you know, he starts obfuscating the reality of what he's talking about. Obama lied, ladies and gentlemen. He lied relentlessly during the so-called debate when there was no debate. He was lying. You can keep your doctor if you want. You can keep your insurance if you want. Period, he says. End of story. He always says this as if what he's just uttered is irrefutable in fact. So either the man knows he's lying, or the law is so untransparent that even the man who signed it into law, the President of the United States, couldn't understand the basic functions of what was in it. So the biggest lie is the lie that Obama did not say in Australia. He implied, this is very important, my friends, he implied that he won the debate. He implied that he won the debate. He implied that he won the debate. He did not win the debate. He won a fight in Congress, which is a different thing, and he won it by brute force, partisan force. And I'll have to carry on discussing this after this short break. It's Doug Urbanski. It is the Savage Nation. Doug Urbanski, guest host, filling in for Michael Savage.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
The veil gets pierced, the CEO gets held liable criminally and civilly for his lies. Now, what recourse do you have when you're the equivalent of the CEO, you're a political CEO, when the political CEO knowingly lies? And when his lies cost American taxpayers tens of thousands of times more than any corporate lie ever could, apparently, in today's United States of America, it's business as usual. Now, yes, lying in the Capitol, yes, you're right, lying in the Capitol is, if you're a politician, lying is expected. It shouldn't be. But the problem here is that we have, really, for the first time since Nixon, a president who will come out and he will say whatever is politically profitable to say at that moment in time, even if he knows it's not true, even if he knows his intentions are entirely different, he'll still say it. So yes, he lies openly about keeping your doctors, he lies openly about keeping your insurance, because he knew it would keep his party in power. If he told the truth about it, he would never have even, they would not have even been able to force the law through the way they did. He thought it would help keep his party in power through the 2010 midterms. That turned out to be wrong. He does not care to understand the American people or what they want. That's out the window, that sort of thinking. So you have a president who lies on behalf of himself. He did it again leading up to I mentioned this earlier in the show. He did it leading up to the 2012 election by telling the American people that he had to follow the Constitution. Then what did he do last week? And what did he say on the day before yesterday? I'm making new law, he says. I'm causing new law. He lied again. Look, he lost the midterms. The Senate swelled with ranks of Republicans. He lost the state houses across the country. And what he does, this is a thing. He says always, you know, my policies are on the ballot. And then, of course, he's after the election, he says, well, my policies were not on the ballot. And he says we had the debate. We had a real big debate about health care. The Republicans were locked out of the debate, and you know it and I know it. What has been ignored is this in this discussion is that when Gruber refers to the stupid American voters, he's referring to the Democrats who paid him for his opinion. Because no one else was buying it, Mr. Gruber. Certainly those of you hearing my voice now weren't buying it. I wasn't buying it. Very tiny group of you were buying it. One thing we can say is that we did not have a lengthy debate over health care. We did not. We just had arguments. The rest of it was untrue. This goes now to the heart of the issue about progressives that we touched on earlier in today's Savage Nation. Ladies and gentlemen, these people seem to be completely unaware that the election results have proved that their policies are not wanted, are not popular. If you listen to these characters, there was last week, and this is written about, last week, at 2014 Policy Summit, hosted by the Center for American Progress. It includes all the characters you'd expect. Elizabeth Warren, Elizabeth Warren, Mayor Bill de Blasio from New York, and Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey, and United Nations Ambassador Samantha Power. Oh, and also the Department of Housing and Urban Development Secretary Julian Castro. They get together. This is last week after the midterms, and they explain their plans for the progressive future. Didn't matter that they had these huge Democrat defeats. They had learned absolutely, utterly nothing. Did they, at this summit, did they propose any new policies? The answer, no, they did not. New policies, no. Done, no. No one suggested, not one of these characters suggests that the midterm losses should prompt new policies for the left, let alone any fundamental change in their direction. So all the usual standard stuff is still what they're talking about, like climate change, income inequality is still a big one. So here we are. It is 6 years after Obama's election. And the liberal agenda, the progressive agenda, does not appear to have changed at all. Not one iota. So they have this little climate change panel, and the left are beside themselves on the topic of climate change. They do not understand why voters don't care about climate change. They don't get this at all. The voters don't care about it. They have many other fixations. The voters, for the most part, know that climate. There's no such thing as man-made climate change. How's that one? So the progressives have decided that the problem here is that they're not framing the issue creatively enough. And you've got this woman, the Environmental Protection Agency Administrator. This is a woman, I could do 3 hours on her alone. Gina McCarthy is her name. She contorts herself into the shape of a pretzel to explain that climate change is about everything except the darn environment. She goes out on the limb, she makes this ridiculous, dramatic claim that climate change represents, and I quote her, the biggest health and economic challenge of our time. Ladies and gentlemen, what about fanatical Islam? What about ISIS? Or ISIL, or Al-Qaeda. Climate change is the biggest public health and economic challenge of our time. You know, we had a few weeks ago, we had Obama say that the Republicans were the greatest thing we had to fear in our time. Not ISIS, not radical Islam. Now, don't confuse the crisis of our time with the biggest challenge of our time. Because the crisis, the left will have you describe, is that the struggles for the middle class masses, progressive prescriptions for helping the middle class, have proven to be failures, have proven to be superficial. This is Elizabeth Warren's big thing. She delivers another impassioned speech, full of the same tired playbook pages of policies which failed to interest voters earlier last month. How should we save the middle class? She keeps repeating, and those on the left keep doing this over and over again. They keep repeating their calls for more regulation, higher taxes on the wealthy. And Elizabeth Warren, just so we're clear, she's not the only person who thinks this way. I mean, there are Democrats who are very proud of these positions. They're even more extreme than she is. De Blasio comes to mind. He does. Some audience member at the thing asked De Blasio for his policy recommendations, and he reiterates, he repeats the same old stale stuff that Elizabeth Warren says. You realize neither of them offer any new proposal that would ease any burden on middle-class families, because they couldn't do that as a good little progressive. What was apparently very interesting in this thing were the topics that the left did not discuss. They do not discuss the importance of issues like the collapse of the family amongst poor people. They don't have a serious policy proposal conversation about things like school choice. They never discuss things like your own individual retirement savings account. They never discuss expanded child credit, tax credits. They don't get mentioned at all by the left because they've got one playbook. They just have these vague, spooky platitudes about how to change the wealthy interests. Only not their wealthy, just the Koch brothers' wealth, apparently. There was one very interesting exchange at the end of this particular thing. There was a panel that was devoted to foreign policy. And if you can imagine this panel as being chaired by Tom Daschle. And he interviews Samantha Power, where Samantha Power is the UN ambassador. And he essentially says, with threats gathering on the horizon, here is an opportunity for progressives to mobile around a message. But he doesn't ever get there. There's 30 minutes of discussion about Ebola. Then there's a discussion about all the minutiae of multilateral negotiations. And then at the end of the 30 minutes, Daschle says, oh, we've run out of time to discuss ISIL, Syria, or Ukraine. Never mind Iran, Russia, or China. And Samantha Power, your ambassador to the UN, says, sorry for that. Those are the three words that captured this administration's foreign policy perfectly. Three words. Three little words. Sorry for that. This is due to their ego. This is due to the endless progressive mantra, you don't know what's best for you, but we do. Look, when liberals lose, ladies and gentlemen, please understand me, it is always this. This is always the answer. We fail to get our message out. They will never admit that people heard their message and rejected it. Reality is just another word in the dictionary to them because they're so unglued from it. The left is also unaware of what the voters continue to tell them that are their most concerns. They don't listen to the voters. Why is that? Please notice that all these privileged, all these well-educated politicians talk only to who? They talk to themselves. And they all live in the Boston-Washington corridor, which doesn't help matters. They have absolutely no idea what is important to real people who live out in the real world. This bunch of progressives, ladies and gentlemen, live and work in ivory towers, and they know they're so smart because they read about that in the book, too. It's the Savage Nation. It's Doug Urbanski filling in for Michael Savage. A few closing remarks when we return. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIA.
I'm reading here online that shoppers are stealing items from each other's carts. Welcome back to the Savage Nation, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, Black Friday. Shoppers brawl over Barbie doll at Walmart. Cops, oh, look at this one. Cops pry woman off of TVs. Women, oh, that's many women off. Cops pry women off of TVs. Man tries to wrestle away home theater system. Oh, brother, Black Friday, ladies and gentlemen, that's what it is. I'm not going out there shopping. I'm going to the theater anyway. I'm going to have some leftover turkey and go out with my wife and very dear friends to the theater tonight. Now, we're talking about these progressives. I want to get some last thoughts out of my mind here before we have to scoot along here on the Savage Nation. Thank you, by the way, Michael Savage. Very good friend of mine inviting me to be here. And thank you, folks, for listening, by the way. And thank you, staff, for dealing with the antics of a mere guest host. Now, to these so-called progressives, ladies and gentlemen, the will of the people does not mean a darn thing. You know that already. Every one of them, to some degree or other, whether they know it or not, is a disciple of Karl Marx, which, by the way, where he lived in London, that happens to be one of my favorite restaurants, is now in that spot. I love the history of places that I visit, as you may know. Now, these people don't give a darn about the American people or what the people want. They are trying, and they continue to try, to convert our system of government to what they think it should be. And they are living in a bubble where, in their mind, debate is outlawed. The Koch brothers, outlawed. Conservative radio, outlawed. Freedom of speech, outlawed. And if you read Saul Alinsky's book, and I do, I keep it here on the broadcast table every time I'm privileged enough to do a television show, Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals, makes it very clear, has one flaw in this brilliant but very demented book. And the flaw is that ultimately you as a conservative, me as a conservative, we become the radicals, my friends. So unless they shut down freedom of speech, and unless you go along with it, we always have the potential to turn the ship of state around. I don't understand. I can't understand how so-called progressives don't understand that attacking the wealthy, by the way, hurts those who are not wealthy. I've never understood this. I've never understood this. The economically active people who are wealthy, they do provide the jobs. The more they're taxed, the less wealth they have to hire people. The more regulations you place on the wealthy, the more money their businesses lose, which means they lose, they have less money and hire less people. This is not rocket science or brain surgery. Let's just call it rocket surgery. It's not even rocket surgery. Why do socialists in America think so many businesses take their work offshore? Why do you think, ladies and gentlemen, progressives are just not very bright when it comes to the real-life consequences of their policies? Period. That's it. Their dream of a utopia will never be realized. And they do not care. They do not care one iota if their policies are popular or not. They know what's best. They alone know what's best. They ram their policies down the throats of the little people, you, me, all the rest of us, with various lies. And they are never confused by facts. They never let facts get in the way. They ignore them. They make them up to justify whatever position they want to take. So you don't need to know facts. We'll tell you the facts later. We'll tell you the facts after. They'll just do it our way. We know what's best. And they, this is the bigger point. Liberals are unaware of their unpopularity because their ideas are always unpopular. They've got to lie, spin, and attack and bully people into accepting them. And your garden variety liberal lacks self-awareness. Your emotional Hollywood activist is even more so. Oh, Obama doesn't care if he's popular or not. He's happy to be king. This is a nihilist approach, morally devoid and empty. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a real pleasure to be here with you. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Don't pry any theater, home theater systems out of other people's hands, please.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.